Welcome to Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. Yes, you heard that right. Join your co-hosts, Dr. Sam Fuller and Dr. Dan Butts, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeons, on an exclusive full-access pass into the world of plastic surgery. Combining their expertise and training, Drs. Fuller and Butts will share medical insights, detailed explanations, and lighthearted humor to keep you entertained and informed. We're certain you'll become passionate about the plastic surgery specialty, and between debunking myths, uncovering truths, or just making you laugh out loud at their perspective on this creative and artistic field, we've got something for everyone. From tummy tucks to Botox and mommy makeovers to surgery do-overs, the Fuller Butts podcast will surely satisfy your podcast fix. All right, now let's dive into this episode.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Fuller. Welcome back to Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Fuller, along with my co-host, the esteemed Dr. Dan Butts, looking sharp in your Quintessa Figs jacket there, sir.
Yeah. Is that Relin? I haven't seen that one in a while.
It is. It's just a little kind of late spring jacket. Very nice, comfortable.
Yeah. Is it springy today?
It is.
We're still like in a deep winter, I feel like.
No, it's
just a few hours west of you.
Yeah, the lake effect, we really get spring earlier.
Is that right? You have no idea.
No, that's not true.
Probably very similar.
But you know what happens in spring is people start gardening. They start doing a little bit of woodwork. They start getting out there and fixing their sheds and their fences, and they start hurting their hands. And that's where I come in.
Yeah, you're their guy.
One of the guys.
Yeah, hand surgery. I mean, we did a fair amount of hand surgery in training. I haven't thought about the hand, except when I wake up sometimes with some numb fingers and I wear a brace for a couple of days.
I can fix that.
I don't want to have it fixed, unless it's really a problem. And that's probably a pretty common thing you do. Do you want to talk about carpal tunnel? Is that too boring?
Carpal tunnel is by far the most common thing that I see in treat.
You do those in like 5 minutes under local, right? And I'm doing something cool. The microscope.
3 to 5 minute outpatient procedure. The fastest I've done is 2 minutes. Wow. It requires a small mini incision at the distal wrist crease. It can be done under local, or most patients prefer to have a sedation.
2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how many?
6 millimeters. It's super small.
What?
The camera is about the size of a pen, and it goes in below the skin, underneath the muscle. So it's really just releasing the ligament or the band, which is the roof of the carpal tunnel.
It's like where Spider-Man shoots out from. Yeah.
So I always check to see if there's any.
Do you use that? Do you tell patients that? Like it's like a Spider-Man scar?
Every time I make the incision, I go pew pew. No, I actually have them just kind of bend their wrist down to make sure that no, of course not. I don't talk about Spider-Man. That's ridiculous.
You should. That's awesome. I guess this is like older patients, not like kids.
Numbness, tingling, clumsiness, dropping things anywhere from 18 and up. Very common. Manual laborers get tendonitis, they get inflammation, their hands go numb. You try to wear a splint for 4 to 6 weeks. If it doesn't work, come to South Bend and let me help you.
Is the vibrational manual labor increase the risk? I feel like I remember
it's controversial. The AAOS put out some recommendations that said that it may be some work relatedness, especially vibratory work. But then there's over.
Well, it's definitely work related, right? But the vibration may make it worse.
There's over 130 different reasons why somebody can get carpal tunnel. So if you are,
so they don't want it to be workman's comp. Is that why they say it's hard to, is that the line we're drawing here?
It really depends, because if somebody does a lot like what you do with like, oh, I built bunk beds for my kids and I built a pizza oven and now my hand's numb, it must be because I'm a surgeon. I operate a lot like that. That's like a no-fly zone, because it's really hard for me to differentiate whether it was the saw and the building of the bunk beds, or if it was the lipo.
Well, Cal's lipo, that thing vibrates a lot.
Yeah, so
I always think about that when I'm lipoing, like that thing's shaking.
How I say it is, you know, especially in the room, is that I, you know, a patient who says, oh, I've been working on the keyboard, my hands go numb, it's work related, and I just say, well, here's Laura, my scribe. She's next to me. She's been typing all day, and her fingers aren't numb.
So it's not just the job. It's likely.
There's some sleuthing. There's some investigation to be done. If someone is an avid guitar player, they're playing shows and gigs, you know, three nights a week, and then they're saying their hands are numb. You know, it may be because of that. It may be because of work. And my job is just to make sure the patient gets better. Like, I don't really have a route. Right. I just want to get to the finish line.
What do you need to get the testing, or do the surgery?
No, the exam is not as clear black and white as I would like it to be, and insurances are growing more and more to the point where it's absolutely necessary. To me, it's very helpful to get an EMG or a nerve conduction study before surgery for a lot of reasons. One is we want to confirm what we suspect. Sometimes cubital tunnel, which is a pinched nerve at the elbow, which causes numbness and tingling into the ring and small fingers, can cohabitate or happen at the same time. And I hate to do a small surgery and you only get partially better. Then we find out, oh, there's a pinched nerve in the elbow too, or the EMG and the nerve study done pre-op can help us. Sometimes there's neuropathy or there's a cervical neck issue happening at the same time, or double crush phenomenon. And to me, that's just very helpful, because in a patient who's diabetic, who's 80, and they have severe neuropathy and carpal tunnel, I'm certainly not guaranteeing perfection. I'm saying there's going to be some improvement, but it's incomplete. And then the EMG or the nerve study can also tell us whether it's mild, moderate, or severe. And it can also help to give us a better prediction on how fast or well you're going to recover. Severe, it's not a guarantee that it will fully come back. Moderate is kind of that sweet spot where you're having issues all the time. It's bothering you. We fix it within a few weeks, couple months, it's better. Mild is, you know, you try splinting. If it's not better, we do the surgery. But for, you know, as we joked about earlier, a 2-3-4 minute procedure, a couple of days of taking it easy. I've had chefs go back to work a week later after having both of them done.
How long would I have to take off?
I mean, you don't work very hard, so you probably just have it on a Friday.
Yeah, 6 weeks for my makeover, 1 day for me.
So I operate on our senior hand surgeon in our group. I released his trigger finger, which is the same recovery as carpal tunnel. I think he took 10 days off and he was back operating. He had it done over the holidays.
10 days seems like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you just imagine like scrubbing in and, you know, treating patients, and you want to make sure that you're doing everything well. You know, I would say that I've had a cashier go back to work the next day. I've had patients, one patient who had their carpal tunnel released, he participated in a push-up-a-thon at the YMCA, and he did over 10,000 push-ups 6 weeks later.
What?
And he came in second place, but he was still pretty proud of his efforts. And so
10,000?
That's a lot. Pressure on your palm after carpal tunnel surgery. So one of my favorite surgeries to do. It is fun. I feel like
I mean, if you're doing 2 minute surgeries, that explains how you can do 14 surgeries in a day.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, I did three, and you're like, I did 14.
Yeah. I'm cheating a little bit, but there's still surgeries. I'm counting them.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you gotta count them.
There's way more to my hand surgery than just carpal tunnel.
Yeah. So, and that's a pretty small little surgery. Obviously, big stuff happens to the hands. Hands are really important. What is like a common like major hand injury that you deal with? Don't say table saws, because I like my table saw.
Well, you talked about major hand injuries. I would say a distal radius fracture or a wrist fracture is very common. Ground level falls, sports, motor vehicle accidents, and that's across the age group. So I have 4 or 5 year olds, 11, 12 year olds, all the way up to 90 year olds fallen for different reasons.
Younger patients, are those like the ones falling off the monkey bars?
Trampolines more in today's world, but yeah, bicycles.
Monkey bars aren't that popular anymore.
I have not had a monkey bar.
Like all the trampolines have like nets on them. Like when I was a kid, when we were kids, we jumped from the trampoline into the sprinkler underneath the trampoline, flips into the pool. We were really trying to injure ourselves.
What are those motorized skateboard like Segways thing called?
Hoverboards.
Hoverboards.
Those things are probably
is huge.
Terrible.
Yeah. Skate or roller skating parties.
My neighbor was going around with bilateral braces. I think she.
It happens. It happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
So one of the, I would say the most interesting or rarest surgeries that I've done recently was a snow leopard injury.
What? There's not snow leopards in South Bend.
So they're actually native to the territory. No. So I was on call for the trauma center on a Thursday.
For Alaska?
On a Thursday.
Where are snow leopards?
And I got a message on my phone, like, please call, you know, so-and-so doctor in the ER. I call him back. I'm like, yeah, we have a zookeeper here who has a amputation secondary to a snow leopard bite. And I was like, a what? And they're like, yeah. And so I looked at the x-rays, looked at the pictures, was able to see the patient that day. You know, it was a experienced, wonderful zookeeper who was very calm throughout this whole ordeal. And, you know, basically explained to me that the snow leopard at our zoo is one of the calmest of the, cat family that they have there. And essentially she was feeding it and it grabbed on, surprisingly to her glove and she couldn't get it off and it kept on biting and biting, and biting where she had to pull her hand out and actually amputated the tip of her finger. So I needed to take her urgently to surgery to repair that and fix that. But, in speaking with the ER, I was like, well, I guess we send her over here with some antibiotics. And I was trying to Google snow leopard injuries and like what the appropriate antibiotic is. And ended up just giving her Augmentin, which is what we use for cat bites, because I just figured it was just a big cat.
No, like there's no big database about snow leopard bites.
No, I scoured all over the world.
You should write a report. You got your first case report.
Yeah, she's doing great. I was able to maintain the length. They did keep the tip in the freezer, but when it's that distal beyond the DIP or you know where the last knuckle joint is of the finger. Yeah, right there. And just based on the mechanism of it being crunched, that's something that's salvageable. So I did a little flap, a V to Y flap. Do you remember those? Adesoy V to Y flap. So I was able to advance the tissue from the pulp of the finger distally to maintain the nail, maintain
a little picture, a little V, turn it into Y.
Maintain the nail and the length of that fingertip. So she essentially has just a slightly shorter finger, but
any full nail beds gone?
No, she's got the nails grown back.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so I was able to preserve that.
Oh, really just a small tip, yeah.
So that was kind of like the most interesting one. Like,
that's so wild. Yeah.
Literally wild, yeah. That was good.
Yeah. I don't get called from the ER really ever.
Yeah, it's...
I don't miss those random weird messages.
Yeah, I had I think it was the same day or the next day, I had a self-inflicted gunshot wound from somebody cleaning his gun, which happens way more than it really should.
Loaded?
I'm not a gun guy, so I don't really know what goes into cleaning of the gun, but I would expect it to be not loaded when that's happening. But basically shot up through the ulnar side of the palm. So basically he lost this entire hypothenar eminence, so all this muscle and skin was gone, and then it went up through his small finger out the tip of it. So he had a fracture at the tip of the finger, and then most of the soft tissues of that side of the palm were gone. So
you're like a fillet, the fillet to...
Well, no, I was save the finger. You were just jumping down the wrong creek. We should have prepped you on this.
I mean, like the whole bone was gone.
No, it just went through the finger. The bone was still there, just fractured that.
Okay.
So the tip was treated with
a small bullet
pin and was able to actually rearrange, wash out, and then mobilize the tissue to close it. So I thought and let him know I might need to do a flap, might need to do skin graft, was able to actually close the tissues primarily once we're able to debride, which is cleaning of the unhealthy devitalized tissue within it, washed it out. He went to wound care for a couple of weeks just to manage the incision, and he's actually fully healed. Motion, he's able to make a full fist, and that happened again. Both of these are about 6-8 weeks out now, but have been.
I guess he was probably lucky it went obliquely, not like through the nerve.
So the ulnar nerve is right there, which is crucial for your ability to abduct and adduct to really have strength and grip. And that was probably the most tedious and nerve-wracking, pun intended, part of the case, where I actually went in with my loops on, magnifying glass, able to...
You wear loops for liposuction.
on combined procedures. I wear that if I'm going to be doing other procedures besides that. But we both trained at an institution where loops were recommended even in the office, like, and sometimes so. I wear them a lot, but was able to actually find his nerve, which was contused but intact. And that's important difference between gunshot wounds and like a table saw or like a kitchen knife, is that the sharp is going to cut through the nerves, the tendons, whereas a gunshot usually goes through the path of least resistance. So it's going to go through the soft tissues, the fat, the skin, but oftentimes the nerves and tendons, they're beat up, they're angry, but we don't necessarily need to repair them. Sometimes they can take a long time to recover. Sometimes they don't recover. They can form a neuroma, or they can get blocked. But
How long does it take? How fast does a nerve heal? Is it like a millimeter a day?
so it's a millimeter a day once it starts to recover or heal. So there's like a Wallerian
There's like a
degeneration.
healing phase before it starts to
So it
heal.
can take anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks to begin the healing process, and then it could inch out.
Inch out over a
Millimeter out,
month.
inch a month, millimeter a day.
Interesting. Gunshot wounds are bad. So table saws. You're familiar with the saw stop.
So SawStop is an amazing device and technology. If you haven't checked it out, you should go and watch their videos. They've had, I think, their owner or CEO actually put his finger in their saw blade. They use these hot dogs, and essentially the electrical signals within these fingers cause the blade to immediately stop and drop out of its position, and
Yeah, it catches like this break and pulls out.
And you end up just with like a tiny nick of the skin, which is a game changer. And it's a lifesaver because there are patients who these are their livelihood. They have been doing this for decades. There's a skip on the device. They blink for a second, something just gets stuck, their glove gets caught, and they end up missing fingers or doing devastating injuries, which are costly in terms of employment, lost wages, inability to return, disability, pain, therapy, multiple surgeries. And so the SawStop is great. Actually, interesting, with you in residency, I was interested in hand, obviously, because I went on to complete a fellowship, but I had thought of a device to try to fix tendons once they were cut. And
I have a picture of us drawing that on the
Yeah,
wall.
so I took that picture and I showed it to some engineers and some innovators at the Curtis Hand Center and the Cleveland Clinic, and actually have a US patent for a tendon coupler or a tendon repair device that is still in the works. It's still something that we're progressing with. Have some meetings with some startup labs and stuff to hopefully get that going. But that is something where the repair of those tendons, which are essentially like fabrics of rope, they're threaded, ropes that move your fingers up and down. We've been fixing them up until today with suture, which is what we've done in the, since the 60s. And if you imagine, what else do we do the same as we did in the 60s, both in medicine and in life? I would say there's very little. And so there's a lot of opportunity for advancement in recovery, in safety, and avoiding trying to sew a rope together with suture, because we know we can.
Yeah, it's been like the holy grail of hand surgery, trying to figure out how to fix
Yeah,
that because
I've solved
they
it.
get scarred down, right? There's like these smooth ropes and these really smooth tunnels. They need to glide, and then you suture them together with all this stuff, and then they scar down, right? So like you basically start moving patients like right away,
That you're
try to
between a
avoid that.
rock and a hard place, because you either sew it up really and it's thick and bulky, and then you are afraid to move them and they get stiff and then they never move again, or you get really aggressive in the post-op therapy and you get them moving and then they rupture and then you're back
Rupture, yeah,
to full go.
because our sutures aren't like scars aren't fully healed, they're not strong enough until 6 to 8 weeks,
And
right?
correct. And sutures, they give out, they weaken, there's inherent instability. If you imagine, trying to sew Kleenex or sew a paper towel together with suture and then start using it, like it can tatter, fray, it can shred. And so there is another company that I've used and works well with a similar type of device. Some of my US patent technology is different, and so I'm excited to bring that, because I do think it's the holy grail, and I think I have the answer. I think I can solve that. So if there's any
Gotta get it out
engineers
there.
And innovators out there who want to help me push it forward, we can. But tendon injuries are huge, and that's something that I'm very passionate about. And
is it a lot of avocado toast?
Avocado hand is a thing that is, you know, that seed or that nut that's in the middle is tricky, and you end up slipping. And
so is it when they're trying to get the nut out, or is it when they're just trying to score it?
I've seen people cut their hands in so many ways. I can't tell you how many times. But the traditional avocado hand, where they get cut is usually somewhere on their thumb, where they're pushing down, trying to get something out, and they end up cutting nerve or tendon of the thumb. That's typically the location for a quote-unquote avocado hand. For a table saw injury, it's usually the non-dominant thumb tip, index, and middle finger, because you're usually holding the wood down with your non-dominant hand, and then it skips or it goes through there. And so you can... you know, usually get a little bit of the story just by looking at the hand. Everybody's injury is different. Every fingertip injury is different, which is why I enjoy hand injuries and getting people back up to their level of activity. But it's interesting anatomy, nerve repairs, tendon repairs, bone. Did a fracture today under local, actually. He fell down the stairs, broke his finger. It was crooked. Came in today. He's a brittle diabetic. He was crashing this morning, so he had a protein shake. Came in to have surgery, and anesthesia was like, we can't, you know, go forward because he's got food in his stomach. It's heading towards the weekend. He needs to get it fixed. I said, hey, let me numb you up. Let's just do it now, or we got to wait till next week. And he said, yeah, I'm good for that. So I was able to numb it up and kind of chit-chatting with him as I'm pushing on his finger, as I'm clamping it, as I'm drilling a pin and then a screw.
Do you still use a tourniquet?
Yeah, I used a forearm tourniquet. Patients tolerate a forearm tourniquet better than upper arm.
So what that means for people listening who might not be familiar, oftentimes in hand surgery, you use a tourniquet so there's no bleeding, correct?
Accurate. Yeah, exactly.
So you can see what's going on because the hands are very vascular.
I would say the majority, if not all, of hand surgery is used with a tourniquet, unless you're using epinephrine to vasoconstrict to remove some of that. It allows us to have a...
But even with epinephrine, don't you still... That only helps.
I've had...
A little?
Well, it's called Wallant. Procedure. That's Dr.
LeBlanc. Like really, really.
So WALANT, wide awake local anesthesia, no tourniquet. That's a technique that I use. There's patients who have AV fistulas or, you know, have lymphedema. They really don't want to use a tourniquet. So there are other ways that we can do that. But in this case, for this patient, surgery was 13 minutes, was able to numb them up really nicely, use a forearm tourniquet, which is more tolerable, less achy. But if you think about me bending a finger back to where it's supposed to be, using a power tool, drilling a pin, and then threading in a screw to compress that, all while he's, you know, kind of chit-chatting with us, that was, you know, it was fun. He was a good sport about it. He didn't have no pain whatsoever, which was great. And what was nice about that is at the end of the case, I had him move his finger, make a fist, and actually check the alignment, and his fingers were bending well. He had a normal cascade and everything was groovy.
Awesome. That's probably just like the tip of the iceberg for hand surgery, but definitely covered a lot of the hot topics that you see on a daily basis.
Yeah, we'll drop a poll down to see if if viewers, listeners want to have more specific hand topics. You know, we're open. We have a few categories and episodes that we certainly want to cover. But, you know, this was fun just to talk a little bit about hand. Had a couple of those interesting cases that we talked about that, I, you know, hopefully if people find interesting, and I'm always game to talk about the entire spectrum of plastic surgery.
Yeah. Awesome. What are we talking about next week?
Liposuction. So
that's a small topic.
So 360 lipo, I always get questions about laser, vaser, Renuvian, pros and cons of that. A lot of patients who just come in saying that they want lipo, because to me, it's more of a generic term for, you know, body contouring. And then you kind of go into issues between skin and fat and what lipo can do. But I think it's important. You mentioned the PALS or the power assisted liposuction system, just to get through some of the basics of what liposuction is, the techniques that we use, what tumescent is, and then recovery, post-op garments, all those things I think are great topics that we can hit home with.
Yeah, that's a very commonly used technique. Even with, you know, oftentimes we're doing lipo with obviously tummy tucks or breast lifts, reductions, like it's often employed with other things as well. Maybe not with carpal tunnels, but
Dan,
maybe
wall. You were phenomenal with this hand episode. You did great. I think there's still a chance you can switch back to hand surgery.
How much call do you take? Aren't you on call like every day? Every other day?
I take a lot of call.
Oh, we don't need to talk about that. Sore subject.
Yeah, that's too soon. I take a lot of call, but I'm happy.
You love it. That's great. Well, thank you for all that education, and we will be back soon.
Fuller Butts, peacing out. See you guys.
Yeah, later.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. Doctors Fuller and Butts are so appreciative of your time and attention. We invite you to subscribe, share, and continue to enjoy our plastic surgery perspective. Feel free to reach out on Instagram at either sfullersurgerymd or at danielbuttsmd, that's Butts with a Z, for comments, suggestions, and support. Remember, be artsy, stay scientific, and make life fun. We hope you'll join us again on the next episode of Fuller Butts.